Hey, welcome to the VBAC Link. Thank you so much for being here with us today. We are truly so grateful for this community and all the support in listening to the show. Before we get started, I wanted to plug in another amazing show that you should go back and listen to if you haven't yet. It is episode 406, where co-founder of Needed, Julie, and I talk more about health, especially during our conception years. We talk more on choline and how important it is, yet how often it is being missed completely. In fact, most prenatal vitamins that you find in the store shelves contain either zero choline or barely any at all. And getting enough from food alone can be difficult. It would take at least 3 to 4 eggs a day to meet the adequate intake of choline. And new research is pointing to the fact that moms may need almost double that amount for optimal outcomes. In this episode, Julie mentions about 95% of moms are not meeting their choline needs. Choline supports babies' neural tube formation and cognitive development, and as well as mothers' healthy metabolism and mood. So getting enough is key. If you are among so many of us who are not getting enough, I highly suggest checking out Needed's Prenatal Choline. You can get 20% off your first order with code VBAC. That is VBAC at thisisneeded.com. Don't forget to go back after this episode and listen to 406 to learn even more information on choline. All right, let's dive in.
Good morning. You are listening to the VBAC Link podcast. This is Julie here with you today, and I'm here with my new friend Elizabeth, and I cannot wait to share her story with you today about her successful VBAC. She's actually a client of Ashley's, who was her doula, and Ashley is part of the VBAC Link team. So shout out to the birth world and to Ashley and Elizabeth. But before we get into that, did want to share one of our blogs with you today. And Ashley actually wrote this blog. Ha ha ha. Ashley is so amazing. I don't know why I made that little laugh. Like I'm a little weird sometimes. If you didn't already know, now you do. Ashley wrote this beautiful blog for us today, and it's about creating your ideal hospital VBAC environment. And this is just kind of brand new at the end of 2024. And she gives lots of really good tips, a lot about how to prepare before birth, about avoiding unnecessary interventions, and setting how to set the tone and really create a supportive space, everything you should pack for a supportive hospital birth, and even more. So we're really excited to share that blog with you. You can find a link to it in our show notes. And kudos to Ashley, because this is a really good blog. Plus, I took the image on the blog banner. So it's actually one of my favorite images. But anyways, I don't know. I just something about a husband holding his wife while she's in labor that just like touches my heart. So go ahead. And if you are planning a hospital birth, you definitely, definitely, definitely want to check out this blog from Ashley.
Hi, my name is Megan. Welcome to the VBAC Link podcast. I am a VBAC after 2 C-section mama, a wife, doula, and VBAC educator. This podcast was created to hold space for those wanting to know their options for birth after cesarean. It is a space where you will likely find yourself getting better educated, relate to stories like your own, and finding the inspiration to help you have a better birth experience. Although we will be sharing stories related to cesarean and VBAC, this podcast is for anyone and everyone who wants to receive evidence-based information and learn how to avoid unnecessary or undesired cesareans. The purpose of this podcast is to educate and inform. It is not meant to replace advice from any other medical professional.
All right, welcome back. We are here with Elizabeth today. Elizabeth is from Michigan. She had a VBAC and with Ashley as her doula. And I'm really excited because Elizabeth is a scientist, and it's really fun to have different perspectives on our podcast. And Elizabeth has worked in the medical field and medical settings before. And I really enjoy that perspective. I love having the different viewpoints coming in here, but also it's really going to be fun to hear about how she took her journey onto a more evidence-based approach and the way that she sees providers and people in the medical field kind of humanizing them a little bit and realizing they are also imperfect people, just like the rest of us. And And I'm just curious to hear more. I don't want to keep talking too much. I'll talk at the end. I promise. You know that I will. But I want to turn it over to Elizabeth right now. Elizabeth, I am really excited to hear your story.
Hi. Yes. Thanks so much for having me. I absolutely love talking about welcoming my babies into the world. So this is great. So I just always feel like I want to give the little disclaimer before I share my birth stories and before I share all my feelings about them and how they went and things. I just like to say that, like, I don't ever want to scare any moms looking ahead to welcoming their little ones into the world, but I do want to tell the truth and the things that I've experienced. And I love my babies. I cherish their births. I'm super grateful for how they went, even the hard parts, because I learned so much from them. But I just do have a passion for taking those experiences and using them to point out where we can and should make things better in the birth space and better support moms in that pregnancy, labor, delivery time of life. So yeah, here I'll start off sharing my experience with the birth of my firstborn son. This was in 2022. So here I am at the end of my pregnancy, my first pregnancy. It went off without a hitch. My pregnancy was so good. I couldn't have asked for a better experience. I had been having contractions for about a week that would intensify in the evenings, but then they'd stop and go nowhere. I hadn't been having any cervical checks at my appointments just because, you know, all those do is tell you where you're at in the moment. They don't tell you what's going to happen, when it's going to happen. So I didn't want to get in my head. So I chose not to have those. But then, alas, I found myself a week, quote unquote, overdue. And I found myself sitting in my midwife's office having a non-stress test. And she was sitting with me talking the big induction talk. We are going through all the consent forms for the different drugs and interventions and looking at the calendar, picking out a date to schedule my induction. And I did not want any of it. I didn't want to interfere with the process at all. I just trusted that when my son was ready, he would come. So I was getting a little freaked out by all this pressure of induction. And she wasn't being pushy. But, you know, she was just following hospital policy. So she was going through these things with me, and it was really freaking me out. And I had been against the idea of having a membrane sweep up until this point because, like I said, I just wanted things to unfold on their own. But the induction talk made me so nervous. So my midwife brought up the possibility of doing a membrane sweep to, like, get things going and hopefully avoid the induction. So I agreed to it. But when she went to do the membrane sweep, it didn't work because I was 0 centimeters dilated and she couldn't even do the sweep.
Oh,
and that
no.
was, yes, it was so discouraging because I had been having contractions for a week. So I was like, well, what in the world has all of that been about? And I'm like, wow, here I am a week overdue and there's no sign of this baby coming. So the next day I tried all the things. I did the disgusting midwife's brew twice. I was like, we are getting this baby out. I did not want the induction. I did the Miles circuit. And little did I know, within 24 hours of that, I would be in labor. So I really did not need to be worried. But, you know, when they start bringing up all these things, you get nervous. And sometimes the trust that you had built up kind of goes out the window. So, But anyways, I went into labor 24 hours later. But that day that I went into labor, we were at a church picnic, just hanging out. I was chatting with all the ladies about waiting for labor to start. And I'd been experiencing the same, like, easy contractions that I'd been feeling for a week. And so I just assumed, you know, nothing is changing. I'm 0 centimeters, I'm sure. And on the car ride home, I could feel things getting more intense, but that's what they had done every night over the last week. So I was like, this is nothing. We got home, we turned on a movie, and I was like draped over my exercise ball on the floor in the living room, hanging out. And my husband was kind of picking up on things that I was not. And he insisted I started timing my contractions. And I'm like, no, it's nothing. Like in 2 hours, it's going to stop and we're going to go to bed and it's fine. But finally, he convinced me. And after I timed the first four contractions, my app was like, time to go to the hospital.
My gosh. Those apps say that all the time.
I know.
Like three contractions and it's like, oh, you're going to have your baby soon. You better go.
Yes. I was like, this thing has to be broken. Okay. So I called my mom. I had her on the phone and she's like, well, can you talk through them? And I was like, yeah, of course I can. And she challenged me. So the next contraction started and she said, okay, do it. Talk to me. And I most certainly could not. So we were like, okay, this might actually be something. So my husband got up and he's running around the house trying to get everything ready to go to the hospital. And I finally agreed to like call the hospital, see what they had to say. And they told us to come in and get checked. So I was like, okay, let's go. So this was around 9:30 p.m. We got to the hospital and I was completely shocked. They checked me and I was already at 5 centimeters and 100% effaced. And my son was at zero station and my water bag was bulging like it was about to break. So I was like, oh my word. I thought I was like 0 centimeters and now things are going. And I was so happy and I felt like my dream labor was unfolding because here I was like halfway there and I hadn't felt any like need for pain medicine or anything like that. So I settled into the hospital room and they had a bathtub, which was amazing. And I just laid back in the tub and every time I'd have a surge, my husband would like push the button and turn on the jets. And then when it was done, he'd turn it off. And that just worked beautifully. And I was just hanging out in the tub. Every once in a while, they'd come in and do the fetal Doppler to check my son's heartbeat. But they were super respectful of the fact that I didn't want an IV. I didn't want continuous fetal monitoring. So I was very free, just hanging out in the tub. And it was everything I wanted. And then one time they came to check my son's heartbeat with the Doppler, I accidentally drowned it in the water. So I had to get out. I know, I felt really bad about that. But I had to get out of the water and go into the delivery room so I could, you know, get his heartbeat checked out by the big monitor that they have out there. And they were like, you know, well, while you're out, let's just check your progress and see how far you are. And I was okay with that. And they checked me and I was at 9.5.
Wow.
I had no
idea.
That's
amazing.
I know. I was just praising the Lord. Like things were very intense, but I was totally shocked that I was basically done. I had gone through transition and didn't know. And I was unmedicated and just like standing there conversing with people in between contractions. And I was like, wow. This is amazing. So then they were like, well, you know, we could break your water and really get things moving. And this was the first problem. So it had been in my birth plan to let my water break on its own. I didn't want to intervene with anything. So I do wish they hadn't suggested this since, you know, they knew that I didn't want that. But in the moment, it sounded so good to be done and meet my son. And I'm like, I'm already 9.5. Like, I'm done. What could possibly go wrong? So I just trusted them and I agreed to it. And when they went to break my water, there was like a sharp pain. And come to find out, my water had already broken and in the tub. And we must not have known because I was
Oh my gosh.
I know.
That's amazing.
So I was like, whoa, this is really encouraging because I know that when your water breaks, things can get more intense. But like, I am here. I made it through. Like, this is as intense as it's going to get, and I am okay. But so I was like, okay, all that's left is to wait. I was sure it wouldn't be long. So I just stood by the bed, working through contractions, and I started to feel more pressure. And now I know that this is just because at the time I was standing, whereas I had been laboring in water, laying back.
Right.
But at the time, I was like, ooh, I really feel pressure. So my husband went to get the nurse, and she came in and was like, all right, let's do some quote-unquote practice pushing, you know, like just let's just get working. And it did not go well, and it just didn't feel right. And after every time they kind of like coached me through pushing, she would look at me and say that it wasn't doing anything, and like I wasn't doing anything, doing it right. And they were kind of coaching me, but nothing was happening. And that was super discouraging. Like, why? Like, I started to doubt myself and my body. Like, why isn't this working? Like, they say to do this, but nothing's happening. And then this is kind of where things took a turn from my dream labor to, honestly, kind of a nightmare. And I don't, like I said, I don't want to scare anybody, but I do want to be honest. And this was really hard. So after, in this stage of like going through coached pushing, 4 hours went by and nothing changed. And
oh my
pushing,
gosh.
Yes, at 9.5.
Oh.
And that just was really shocking to me, because the entirety of my labor from 0 to 9.5 felt like it had just been a couple hours.
Yeah.
But now, because I got there at 9:30, and at 2 a.m., I was at 9.5. So I was like, wow, this is moving along. But then 4 hours more went by at 9.5, and I was getting so exhausted and falling asleep between contractions. And it really, my ability to cope with the contractions was really deteriorating. I was really getting unable to stay on top of them when they came.
Yeah, well, of course, that's a long time to push.
It's a long time, yeah. And I didn't know why, but the pain just kept intensifying and intensifying. And the only way I can describe it is, by the end of that 4 hours, I was just like out of my mind. Like, I kind of felt like I was maybe not in my own body anymore, because it just, the pain was very severe. I mean, I was so tired and out of it that I wasn't able to, like, in my conscious mind process this, but like inside me, I was feeling like, what is going on? Why am I still here? Like, I felt trapped, because I pretty much did a whole normal labor, and it was like, I was so fine, you know, like I was coping, and it was very intense, but it was not like pain that was like bad, like I'm being injured kind of pain, you know. It was like good, productive, intense feelings. So I'm like, why am I now just completely out of my mind and like suffering?
Yeah.
So around 6 a.m. I finally got some answers, and my midwife came back in and told me that that last half centimeter of cervix remained, and it was inflamed, and it was swelling bigger and bigger. So my baby was just getting more and more stuck. And something that was discouraging to me was that this was the first that I had heard about what might be going on. And she told me that earlier in the night, she had tried to manually move that last bit of cervix out of the way, and to quote her, she said that I didn't like it. And that in my mind, now when I think back, I'm like, yeah, I bet, like that sounds terrible. And I had no idea that they were attempting that. So like, how could I mentally prepare for that like pain? But I don't remember that happening at all. And so basically I had spent hours pushing when my body wasn't ready, and I was
Right.
pushing my son up against an inflamed cervix. And like, no wonder the pain was getting more intense, because it was getting more and more irritated, inflamed, swollen, and I was just like jamming him up against it. So then I had answers for what was causing the pain. And at that time, my midwife gave me two options. She said, option number one is that we give you an epidural and we hope that the inflammation goes away, but there's no guarantee that it will. And if it doesn't, you're going to need a C-section in a few hours. And option number two is go for the C-section right away. And so in that moment, like, I don't use this term lightly, but I was actually suffering, and neither option sounded good.
Right.
But my midwife, I kind of pushed her, like, what do you think I should do? And she said she felt the C-section was the better option. And I asked my husband and he agreed. And I didn't realize till after the fact how hard it was for him to watch. Like I said, I was kind of not with it at all, but I guess like watching me, it was hard on the people around. And like, I heard after the fact that like even nurses were crying, and my husband was having a hard time watching me struggle. And like, I guess other moms were like hearing me and asking like, is she okay? So I was like, I had no idea how intense it was, but that's what I heard after the fact. So my husband was like, yeah, I think you should just go for the C-section and like, let's be done. So I was like, okay, let's do it. So my luck was not great, because right when we called the C-section, it was shift change. So there was a lot going on. And this was a smaller hospital, so the surgery staff is not at the hospital overnight. But it was close to shift change. So they were like, we've called in the surgery staff. My husband saw a text on my midwife's phone from the doctor that would be doing my C-section that said, I'm on my way. So we were waiting for everybody to get there. And I was told by 7 a.m., you will be in the operating room. So I was just like entirely unable to cope. And I just like stared at the 7 on the clock and said, told myself, like, I can make it that far. Aww. And then 7:30 rolled around.
Oh, I knew it. Yeah. I knew it.
And I was just having a really hard time. And there was just tons of people running around the room, people I'd never seen, just running around. Everybody was very frantic. And at that time, I felt a change in my body. And now I know that that was totally the fetal ejection reflex kicking in. But at the time, I was like, whoa, what is happening? And I kind of yelled out, like, I think something's coming out of me. And one of the nurses who was, like, running past the bed kind of stopped and looked at me for a second. But, like, she didn't even lift up the blanket that was over my legs. And then she just, like, kept running. So nobody, like, really heard me or listened to what I was saying. And I'm like, something. I just kind of, like, sat there and tried to ride it out. So then they started wheeling my bed down to surgery, and holy moly, the fetal ejection reflex just kept going, kept going, kept going. And because there's no stopping that. And I didn't know that's what was happening at the time, but I was just like, my body was experiencing that intense push, and I was just making the craziest animal sounds. As happens.
As it happens. I was going to say that.
Totally normal. But I was like, what is happening? And I remember thinking, like, because they had to wheel my bed down. I was on the third floor and they had to take me down to the first floor. And this, I actually worked at the hospital that this happened at. So I remember thinking, or maybe I shouldn't put that in the podcast. I don't know. So maybe we can edit that out. I don't know if I'm supposed to say that.
No, you're
good. But anyway, so they wheeled me down from the third floor to the first floor. And I just remember thinking, like, I'm going on a tour of the hospital, and everybody, like all these poor people, are having to hear me scream. So, like in this moment, I'm like thinking, sorry, everybody else, which is kind of funny to me. But, anyways, they get me to the operating room and they transfer me over. And I remember thinking, like, how narrow the table was. I don't know, that just stuck out in my mind. And then several people held me down on my side so that they could do the spinal blocker because I didn't have an epidural or anything placed. So the anesthesiologist had to put a spinal blocker in. But while they were holding me on my side, it was just like the most intense pain. And I like screamed out, "Something is coming out of me."
Oh my
So
gosh.
the doctor ran over and checked me, and I'm super thankful that they listened to me that time and they checked, and I will just never forget the look on her face when she looked up and she looked around the room at all the surgery staff and said, "She's complete and the baby is descending." So we all like shared a moment of shock as we realized that I was about to give birth vaginally on a tiny operating room table in a room full of surgery staff. But
Oh my
I'm like,
gosh.
but we were like, we can do it. So we're like, let's go. So they like set the table up. So I was sitting up, but the anesthesiologist had pushed the spinal blocker just seconds before we realized that my son was coming out. So
Oh.
yes.
Sorry, I'm just like, what, I'm waiting. I'm on the edge of my seat. What happens? What's gonna
Oh
happen?
yeah, here we go. So with a spine, like with an epidural, you have kind of that numbness feeling, but you can still push. Your muscles still work, so you can push out a baby with an epidural. But a spinal blocker completely like paralyzes the
Yep,
muscles.
and it takes effect really
So
fast.
it is very fast. I can attest to that. So I could feel like the paralysis, so my contractions were
Oh
stopping.
no,
So
Elizabeth, no.
I know.
Oh.
So my nurse, who was super sweet, I'm so thankful for her, but she had stayed like way past the end of her shift to just to stay there and help me, which I so appreciate. And she had her hands on my stomach and she was like, "I will feel your stomach
Like
and I will
push,
tell
push.
you when you're having a
Oh.
contraction and you just push." So I was able to do like one really good push, but by the time I had another contraction, the spinal had gone too far. So everything was just completely stopped. So we all kind of just like took a deep
Collective
breath of
sigh.
like,
Yeah.
what
Oh.
just happened? So we just kind of like came to peace with the fact that like, okay, he's not. We're not gonna do this, you know, we're gonna have to do a C-section. So the doctor actually had to push my son, like she reached up and had to push him back up into my uterus so that they could do the C-section because he wasn't quite low enough for like a vacuum, but
Right.
we couldn't get him out. So they pushed him back up,
Oh
which was a
my
very
gosh.
strange feeling. And then while all this was happening, I felt so bad for my poor husband. He's such a trooper. They escorted him into the operating room, and he was expecting the procedure, the C-section, to be underway. But when he walked in, he saw me sitting up pushing. So
Oh
this
my
guy
gosh.
was totally thrown for a
He just
loop.
got railroaded too. I mean, like everybody, I feel like.
I know.
But oh, these poor husbands of ours. My
I
gosh.
know. I know. So, anyways, we just did it. They did the C-section. My son was born. I could hear him cry, but they took him away for a few minutes. He was on oxygen for a little bit. But I remember seeing him like reaching his hand up, and I saw his hand across the room, and that
Oh.
gave me some peace. And I didn't get to see my husband cut the cord, but after a while, they brought my son, or my husband brought him over to me and held him up to my face. And then I got to hold him when I made it to recovery. So there's birth story number one. I don't know myself.
Elizabeth,
I
I
know.
don't think I have ever, ever heard a story like that before.
Woo, what a trophy to have.
No, I mean, like, But how are you? Like, how can we just
Yeah.
pause for a second? Like, how is your mental state and processing? Like, how is
Yeah.
all of that afterwards? Like, before we get into your VBAC, I'm curious to hear about
Yeah.
that, like the after for you.
Sure. I appreciate that question because for so long, I didn't even realize that that was that. Like, I didn't know that that was a wild story, you know? This was my first time giving birth, so I just kind of accepted it or tried to accept it mentally of like, okay, well, people have C-sections all the time. I've tried to like come up with a theory of what happened, and the only two things I can think of are like when they tried to break my water, maybe they like scratched my cervical lip instead and it swelled, or when they did the C-section, my son presented OP, he was sunny side up, so
Oh, so
it's
maybe it just
so
took him a little while longer.
right. Like maybe you know that I know sometimes a baby that's OP can make a lip, so I don't know, but yeah, I don't know. I think I was rather unwell for a year after my son was born, but I don't think a lot of people knew that, and I don't even think I really knew, like, you know, this is not normal. But I really, the way I was coping with that, like as a scientist, my inclination is just get all the information, get all the information. So I just consumed huge amounts of birth podcasts, read books, just studied to learn as much as I could about birth. And I think that's really what gave me like peace in the end of just being able to wrap my mind around like what it should look like. And it gave me hope for the future. So yeah, now I'm doing great. I've made peace with it all. But it did, like, that experience brought, and then the things I learned after it really brought to my mind the importance of like protecting the birth space and making sure that fear has no place in it and equipping yourself with evidence-based information and making sure that your providers operate that way too, and that they aren't influenced by fear. And then also, just like to me, after all this, I've come away with the understanding like, I'm not advocating for this, but if you, like, 9 times out of 10, if you were in labor and you just walked out into the forest and had your baby, it would probably
It would
all be
eventually
just
come
fine.
out. Yeah.
Yeah, you would be fine most of the time. And I am not anti modern medicine. I actually really believe in modern medicine. Until I stepped away to be a stay-at-home mom recently, I was a healthcare professional working in a hospital to help patients who need it. But that's the thing, is like birth is not a disease. You're not a patient. You're not sick. You're a client because being pregnant and giving birth is like a sign of health. This is what you're supposed to do. And when you're going into the hospital, hiring an OB, a midwife, you're hiring somebody to support you because you're not sick and you could walk out into the forest and probably just do it on your own. Some of
I
these
love
people
that so
should
much.
be
I
there
love
to
that
help
so
you.
much.
Yes. So I'm very much like, no meddling unless you need to meddle. The burden of proof should be on the people who want to interfere with the natural process
Yes,
to
just say no
prove.
to meddling.
Yes, no
When it's
meddling.
not necessary, of course,
Exactly,
because we're
exactly.
grateful when it is. We are grateful for modern
Exactly.
medicine, and there are times it's appropriate, and there are times it does save
Right.
lives and help
Right.
improve health, but it can also cause a lot of problems.
Right. And that's why they need to leave fear at the door, because they need to be able to know when we go out of the range of normal, truly. Instead of let's do all the things to keep anything bad from happening, we need to know what real, normal, physiological, undisturbed birth looks like so that we can identify when we do need to step in and otherwise just sit on your hands.
Do you know what? I just had this epiphany, or not, epiphany is probably not the right word. This realization, like, nowhere else really in the medical field do they do preventative care, right? Like,
yes.
How many things could be solved by
yes.
eating healthier, exercising yes. more? Says me as I sit on my computer drinking a Dr. Pepper, okay? Like, I am not the epitome of health. I will say that, right? But drinking more water, taking supplements, electrolytes, like improving our heart health, tackling this obesity epidemic. No, we treat it when you're already there. Like there's so much garbage in our foods and all of this stuff. And we treat symptoms. We don't try and prevent unless you're pregnant. And then they want to do everything just in case, just in case your baby gets stuck, just in case your baby's too big, just in case da 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 da. Right. Why? Why is it so? I'm just having this like realization right now. It's so, so backwards.
Right.
I mean, and like, when why are we not letting birth happen and then also doing preventative things to help make us healthier outside of that? Like, I am so on, I'm a little irritated.
Join the club. Join the club. That is why I've become the biggest birth nerd, because that's exactly my question. And if you interfere with a natural, healthy process, any little interference is going to have downstream unintended consequences. And a lot of the things that we do that aren't evidence-based in maternal pregnancy care, they're based in fear, and we have no idea. We have no idea what those downstream consequences are. Because if you look into it, a lot of these things really haven't been proven to be worth it, in my opinion. But who am I?
Hey, you're a mom with real-life experience, and that matters a lot.
That's
it matters. It doesn't matter as much as it should as far as when the medical field sees it, but it should be the most important thing that matters.
Right.
In my unprofessional opinion.
Yes. And I do think it's kind of helpful to share, because like that birth story, it sounds like it was very hands-off from like uninfluenced from the medical model, but just some things I'd like to call to attention to like make us think about like, why do we do that? Those things. I have a little bit of a list to just like make it very clear. So the first thing, I was quote unquote a week overdue, which first of all, they'll tell you only 50% of people give birth before their due date. So it's like, are the other 50% like in imminent danger? Because I don't agree with that. But anyways, I don't even know if I truly was overdue, because I knew I was very much trying to conceive my son. I knew my dates exactly of when I ovulated, when everything happened, and I had my due date based on that. But then when I came in for my ultrasounds, my son was very long, and they bumped his due date up a week just based on his size. And he was born in the 99th percentile for length still. So I don't even think that I was overdue. But because they thought I was overdue because they messed with it with the ultrasound technology, that brought on the induction talk, and that brought on the attempted membrane sweep I didn't really want. And then when I'm in labor, we attempted to break my water, even though everything was going fine, and I didn't really want that, just to move it along.
And then I would argue, like, getting out of the tub. Because if you wouldn't have had a cervical check, I mean, like, I don't like to play the what if game, right? Because it doesn't change anything.
Yeah.
But like, that was the first, one of the first things that kind of led to this pushing too soon and knowing you even had a swollen cervix, you know?
Anyways, because I wouldn't have felt any urge to push. I wouldn't have done it.
Yeah.
So yeah, they tried to manually open my cervix. There were some things that I didn't mention for the sake of time, but during my labor, I was actually misdiagnosed with preeclampsia that I didn't have.
Oh my goodness.
Which thankfully has been removed from my chart now from my new midwife. But yeah, I did not have preeclampsia, but they were very nervous because they thought I did. And then I wasn't being listened to, and I said my baby was coming out in the delivery room. So then I made it all the way down to the OR, and then the spinal blocker actually ended up affecting my breathing during my C-section. So, and then when I was in my C-section, the anesthesiologist kept yelling at me to stop shaking, because she wanted to get my blood pressure. I was
okay.
like, I'm just going to ignore you because I physically cannot stop shaking. But that was not protecting the birth space.
No.
And after my C-section, the doctor who performed it came around the curtain and said, it was nice to meet you. But she had actually been my OB for the first half of my pregnancy before I switched to my midwife. Yeah. And that just messes with your mental space. And then I wasn't heard or helped when breastfeeding wasn't going well afterwards. And I wasn't given any information about how to heal from my C-section. And I just feel like that shows the fear, meddling, and like impersonal care that naturally comes out of a medical model that is based in like seeing as many patients as possible.
Yeah.
To make enough money.
Yeah. Just a factory, right?
Yeah.
Go in, go out, go in, go out. Next bed, next person, next bed.
Yeah. And okay. I totally get it, but.
Let's talk more on choline for a moment. The RDA is 450 to 550 milligrams while pregnant and nursing. Though research suggests that upwards of 900 milligrams in pregnancy supports optimal perinatal and infant health outcomes, most prenatal vitamins contain 1/10 or less of the RDA, as choline is a bulky nutrient and manufacturers often don't want to increase the number of capsules per serving. Choline supports the baby's brain and cognitive development during pregnancy and after birth. Choline can be found through food sources like eggs and liver, which is amazing, but more often than not, it's harder to get the full amount that we need on a daily basis. Needed has created an amazing option for when or if you need to supplement so you can do so with ease and confidence that you're getting the choline needed. Their choline add-on is dosed at 500 milligrams of choline chloride per capsule to help you reach your optimal levels. This is a form that can be used in research for optimal outcomes in mothers and their babies. Find prenatal choline and more information about choline on episode 406 and at thisisneeded.com and enjoy 20% off your first order with code VBAC.
Let's get on to your VBAC story. I know I kind of took us off on a little bit of a diversion there. No, you're totally fine. I'm okay to go good to go over for a little bit, but we should probably do that before we have a 4-hour podcast.
I know.
Talk all day. We can just talk all day.
So, this is what I meant about the details.
I know. But here's the thing, Elizabeth. I am also a sucker for the details. Like my friends, I'm in this friends group. There's 5 of us. All birth workers. There's a midwife. I'm a birth photographer. There's 2 other birth photographers and a doula. And there's 5 of us and we're pretty close. And we were playing this game. See, here I am going on a little tangent with a detail. And they're making fun of me. There's this like, I think it's called like girls night out or something. It's just like a fun game. You sit at the table. And anyways, there's a card that's like most likely to not be able to tell a story in less than 10 minutes. I'm like, oh, that's me. Like everybody just hands down. And now it's a joke. Now it's a joke in our group. So I totally get it. But yes, let's go. Let's get on to your VBAC so that we can make sure to share all of it without going too long. But I don't want you to try and rush through it either. So if we go a little bit over, that's okay.
This one's much faster. So. So this brings us to my daughter's birth 2 years later. I was so adamant that I was going to get this VBAC. And I know everybody, like, I feel like a lot of us have that feeling of like C-section is not an option. That was totally me. Even though it was like, you know, if it's necessary, fine, but it's not an option. So I did.
But you just like make that a little note of that, like, if it's necessary, I will do it to save my life or my baby's life. And then you wrap it up and put it away. And then C-section is not an option, right? Like you make the acknowledgement, you put it away and you focus on the end goal, which is a vaginal birth.
Yes. Yes. So focused on that goal. So I got a new wife, I got a new midwife at a different hospital because my hospital that I had my son at, they actually don't support VBACs at all. So I've had to find a new midwife, go to a different hospital. Things were going pretty good with that. I was shocked after being a week overdue with my son that in week 37, with no signs of labor, all of a sudden one night my water broke. And that was amazing. Right after dinner, I was a little nervous because this time around, I had a doula because I was not messing around. Like, we are getting this VBAC. She wasn't even on call for me yet because I was in week 37, but she was super sweet and she still supported me anyways. So after my water broke, I told my husband we were about to go to Bible study. So I said, you just go, you take our son, go to Bible study. Who knows how long this is going to be? So I'm just going to go lay down. You guys go do your thing. And so I went and lay down in bed to rest while I could. And I could like feel my daughter wiggling around like she was exploring or like trying to figure something out, find a way out. And that was pretty cool. And my contractions started coming on pretty immediately. So I called the hospital around 7:45 p.m. And the midwife that was on shift said that if I started having contractions, I needed to come in right away so that they could put me on monitors to make sure my scar is holding up. And she said, if I don't get contractions, I need to call them again in the morning and they'll have me come in to get things going. I didn't tell her on the phone, but I was already having contractions. But something fell off to me with the way she was talking. So I was like, I'm not telling her anything and I'm not going anywhere. So I was like, she won't even notice if I don't show up. And when I was on the phone with her, she made a comment about how people tend to have different feelings and opinions on VBAC. And when I get there, everyone can share their thoughts and feelings and we'll see whose are the strongest. And that just really didn't sit well with me. Those red flags. Like, this does not, she says that she's a VBAC. This was not my midwife. This was just the one on call. And she says that she's VBAC supportive, but that was just a red flag to me. I'm like, I don't know about that. So I ignored the advice and I just was like, I am staying put as long as possible. My husband, after a Bible study, took my son to the grandparents' house, and he got home around 10:30. Around 11:30, I got in the shower, and it was like the best shower of my life. We have a window in our shower, and I had the window open. I was watching the fireflies. I was just like enjoying. It was the best. But my husband kept coming in and like, I don't want to pressure you, but I really think we need to think about leaving. And I was like,
go away, husband.
What are you doing? I am doing fine. I'm going as fast as I can, which I thought that shower was like 15 minutes. But after 45 minutes, he came in. He was like, I don't think you realize how you sound right now. Like, we need to go. And then I realized at that point, I was like on my hands and knees in the shower. And I was like, okay, maybe things are moving along a little faster than I realized. So I got up, we went out to the truck and we prayed. This was like 12:45 in the morning. We prayed, got in the truck, went to the hospital, and I was a little discouraged because I like to say getting in the car is the first intervention.
Yes.
And yes, and my contractions really started to space out and that was making me nervous. We got to the hospital around 1:10 in the morning, and this hospital has like a labor and delivery triage. So I had to be stuck there for a little while. And luckily, after being in there for a couple of minutes, my contractions started kicking back in. And the nurse walks in, and I was in the middle of a contraction, like moaning through it. And she just goes, "What's your name? What's your date of birth?" And I was totally not answering. I'm not even able to answer. So my husband starts answering for me, and it just became clear that like this was just another day at the office for her. Whereas for me, this is like one of the biggest days of my life. Like, I need support. So that was not great. She like gave me the hospital gown, said, "Take everything off, put this on, I'll be back, we'll check your cervix," and walked out. And I did not want a cervical exam. So when she came back in, I was like, "Hi, sorry, we're not doing that." And she was like, "Well, we're really busy. So you need to quote her. She said, "You need to give us something in order to get a room upstairs." And I was like, "Well."
Did you say, "Okay, I'll just have my baby right here then?"
Yeah. I'm like, I guess I'll be staying here. And in my mind, I'm like, if your job is working with laboring women, you should be able to
be a little nice.
Yes, you should be sensitive to what's going on. And also, you should be, there are signs to see on the outside of one's body whereabouts in the spectrum of labor they are. And I feel like I was very clear. I was very much in active labor. But that was not enough for them. They have their policies. They want to put their hand inside of you and see for themselves. And I said no. So then she said, okay, what about, like, I had told them that my water broke. I knew it had broken. There was no question. And they were like, well, we could do a test to see if your water broke. And I was thinking, okay, my understanding, they were going to do the Fern test. And my understanding of that procedure is that they'd take a gloved finger and kind of swipe and then slide that on a microscope slide. And then they can check it for amniotic fluid. But nobody explained the procedure to me. That's just what I knew. So I said, sure, let's do that. Like, in my mind, I'm like, if that's going to get me upstairs, I don't want to do it. There's no need because I know my water broke. But, like, if that's going to get me a room, fine. So I agreed to it. But then what she ended up doing is coming and just putting the microscope, like the glass microscope slide, just directly on me over and over. And I don't know if people know this, but microscope slides are rather sharp. So it was like,
yeah,
cold and hard and like kind of like scratching up my legs. And I was not expecting like that. There was no explanation of like, hey, this is a sensitive thing. This is the procedure. Are you okay? Let's carry on. It was just like, do the job. So I would not have agreed to that, but I was like, I really want to get upstairs. So then she leaves and I was just laboring for a while. She comes back in eventually and says, hey, you sound really uncomfortable. Are you sure that you don't want a cervical exam so you can go upstairs?
Oh my gosh.
And I was like, wasn't the Fern test positive? And she's like, yeah, it was positive. And I was like, so in my heart, I'm like, I feel like I was just coerced. Like I was just duped because I didn't want to do that. And the only reason I did it is because I thought that was like, the way it was presented to me was like, this is what's going to get you a room. So I'm like, well, why did we even do that? Because it didn't give us any more information. I knew my water broke.
Yep.
But anyways, I was like, let me just go to the bathroom. I'll think about it and I'll let you know when I come back. So my husband helped me make my way down the hall to the bathroom. And I'm just like stopping every couple steps to like moan through contractions, leaning up against the nurse's desk, like on all their faces, like, oh.
Oh my goodness.
And I go to the bathroom and I felt a lot of pressure. And that kind of set off a little alarm in my head, like, okay. I make it back to the room. And then she says, hey, do you want a birth ball? And I was like, finally, that sounds so nice. Because I've been there
helpful.
For like an hour and a half. And I sat down on the ball and I just like jumped right back up. I was like, oh, no way. That was terrible. So I'm like, okay, fine. I had it in my mind, the back of my mind, like, okay, I think that we're getting there because I feel a lot of pressure. So finally, even though I didn't want to, I consented to the cervical check. And it was so hilarious because she did it and got instantly like excitable because I was at a 9 and they were instantly, oh, let's get this girl out of here because they do not want
told you I was in labor.
Yeah, super fast. They like, it was very quick. They got me upstairs to a labor and delivery room, and our plan was like, okay, when we get a room, we'll text our doula Ashley and then she'll come and she'll help me through labor. Well, there was apparently no time for that because like my husband shot her a text like, hey, we're being admitted. We're going upstairs. And she got in the car. She did not make it. So we got up to the room around 3 a.m. and they wheeled my bed up to the other bed. And they're like, okay, get in that bed. I'm like, guys, I cannot move myself. So finally, eventually, they helped me get into the bed. And I'm like, I did not want to be in the bed, but I thought, you know, we're going to get settled here and I'll be able to like get in the tub and do what I want to do and get comfy soon when they're done with all their logistics. So I'm just like laying, kind of like holding myself up kind of on my side in the bed because, you know, there's a baby that feels like it's coming out of me. So I'm like trying not to sit on her head. So I'm like laying on my side and I totally experienced, like, you know, they say sometimes when you get fully dilated, your body experiences a rest before the pushing.
Yeah.
And I totally was in that. It was great. So I was just chilling there, and I had this new nurse. She's doing all her things, getting ready. She hadn't talked to me or anything, hadn't introduced herself. The room was perfectly quiet. And then I hadn't had any contractions in there. All of a sudden, the fetal ejection reflex kicks in, and I just, like, absolutely roared the roar, as you do. The nurse just was totally, did not move at all, did nothing. And I'm wondering if maybe since she didn't see me having contractions, she just thought, like, wow, this girl really cannot hang. And then the second push happens, and I roar again, and my husband says, can you help her? And she looks over at us, and fear just flashes over her face, and she's like, you can tell, she's like, oh my gosh, I don't want to catch this baby by myself. So she just starts frantically calling people, and we hear on the phone, they say, like, the midwife's not going to make it. And so she hangs up and calls more people, and they thankfully were able to find a random team of people to come in and help me, and they caught my baby. And so within like 20 minutes of being in the room, my baby was out, and it was the best. And this time they just like put her right on me. It was so sweet. So much a better experience than not being able to have my son right away the first time. They just gave her to me, and Ashley walked in not long after she was born, my doula, and she was super helpful while they were doing like the stitching and stuff, because I did have a tear, and it was just so much better. And postpartum, so much better. And I'm super thankful for that.
I love that so much. Wow. Okay. So I love how you said that, like, and I always say this too, like, if you're birthing at a hospital, like, the first intervention is leaving your house.
Yes.
It really is. And that's okay, because not everybody wants to have a home birth. Not everybody is comfortable birthing at home. But if that's you, right, which is most of the people are, and that's totally fine. No judgment here. I had 3 home births myself. That was the right choice for me, but I also acknowledge it's not the right choice for everybody. But yes, so I feel like, Elizabeth, I love how you were very careful about when you decided to make that for, you know, quote unquote, first intervention, because a lot of people, like your doctor, will be like, oh, the first contraction you have, come here because uterine rupture, which, okay, I said that in a little bit mockingly. I feel like they really believe that, right? And I don't want to make fun of anyone for doing what they believe or practicing in the way that they have been taught and educated to practice, because I do believe for the most part, most medical professionals really do want the best outcomes for their patients. I don't think anyone ever walks into a birth room to deliver a baby or get heart tones or whatever, intending to do harm or hurt people mentally or physically, right?
Right.
And so I really appreciated how you said that, because when your midwife told you, was it midwife or an OB that told you, just come in as soon as you start having contractions?
It was another midwife, yes.
A midwife. Okay. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I think that you knew better, you knew enough, not that you knew better than her, right? It's just a different type of knowledge. And so you were, yeah, very intentional about when you chose to go. And I think that alone probably helps offset the chances of having unnecessary interventions in the future. And I'm really glad that you mentioned that. I was going to mention it, but then I didn't want to like insert my opinions into your post either. So I'm being more careful about when I do that, when people are sharing their stories with me. But I appreciate that you said that.
One thing I would encourage moms to consider is that the experts are just real people like you and me. And like in any field of work, some people are better at their jobs than others, or they've chosen this job for different reasons. And no nurse, no doctor, no midwife is all knowing or all powerful. And at the end of the day, you are the number one player in your birth team. And at the end of the day, no one can bring your baby into the world but you. So while it would be my hope and prayer that every mom would just be fully supported and have an amazing team every time that they bring a baby into the world, just know that it might not always be the case. And I think it's super important to do everything you can to like vet your midwife before you choose to see them. And I know it's not that easy for everybody with insurance and things like that, mm-hmm. but just, yeah, I would say try everything you can to surround yourself with the right people. I think having a doula is huge. And then at the end of the day, just make sure that you are equipped with all the information that would be helpful to you and know like the things you want and don't want, and maybe in what scenarios you might change your mind or what wouldn't change your mind, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I love that perspective. Just like we're all humans, we all make mistakes. We all do things that we look back on and say, oh, shoot, I should have done that differently, right? Like I would be surprised if the anesthesiologist that gave you the spinal during your C-section wasn't like, oh, shoot, I should have just waited like a minute. Yeah, you know what I mean?
Right,
like,
exactly.
Things like that. We are. And I think it's really common to kind of put the medical professionals on a pedestal a little bit, which mm-hmm. is okay in some contexts, I think, because especially during COVID and stuff, the stuff that they had to deal with and go through and the long hours and mm-hmm. continuing to expose themselves to this disease that we didn't know a whole lot about at the time and all those things like that, that deserves praise and recognition and it takes incredible strength. And you're dealing with people too, who are also just incredibly frustrated all the time, but mm-hmm. also I feel like it can hinder us and our care when we do that too, thinking that they just know everything. And yeah. Like I've sat in a doctor's office with my provider once, and we literally opened up Google and we're like searching some yes. symptoms and medications like mm-hmm. together, like we were doing it yes. together. And I just think it's so funny when some of these medical professionals will be like, don't confuse your Google search with my medical degree. And I'm like, literally we have access to the yes. largest database of information yes. ever in the history of mm-hmm. humans. So yes, I don't have yes. that full training, but I do have access to high quality information.
Yes.
And so I think that one thing that we should just end with is that you as a human, as a person, as a woman, as a mom, you know your body and your baby better than any of these medical professionals ever will.
Absolutely.
And they know a lot about the medical field, more than you will probably ever know. And when you find a provider that can have that mutual respect for you and you guys can kind of trust each other and make shared decisions together, that's mm-hmm. such a beautiful thing, right? Nobody should ever feel like they have to get a cervical check in order to have a baby or, mm-hmm. you know, things like that. And so, yeah, I love that perspective. I'm glad that we're talking about this because it's hard for people. You said something, what was it? You were sharing your story and you said something like, I was worried about other people. It was like, were you getting transferred into care? Oh, you were being wheeled yes. down the hallway and you were like I was worried about yelling. Being loud. Yes, yes. And you were worried about how you, because we kind of are trained, for lack of a better word, to be that way, right? People pleasing, mm-hmm. especially as women, right? Like we're trained to like be seen and not hurt and be, you know, and take care of everybody and other people. So when it's time for us to be taken care of, it can be hard to shift our mindset into being the receiver instead of the giver. And mm-hmm. yeah.
I was just going to say that I think that birth is really like the ultimate opportunity for a woman to lean into her power, because mm-hmm. this is such a uniquely woman thing. And when you feel the feelings that naturally come in your body when having a baby and you realize how much power is in your body, it's really amazing. It's really transformative. And I would just encourage moms to lean into that and not doubt themselves.
Yes. Lean into it and embrace it and trust yeah. it. Sometimes it's hard to trust ourselves or trust our intuition or our instincts. But yeah, I think that's one of probably the most beneficial things you can do, not only in your life, but in your journey to having a redemptive and healing birth.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. Well, Elizabeth, thank you so much for joining me today. We've been going for a little bit long, but I think it's good. I love talking, and I think it's something that I'm incredibly passionate about and people need to know. So thank you so much for joining us today, and I can't wait for people to hear your story.
Thank you.
Would you like to be a guest on the podcast? Head over to thevbacklink.com/share to submit your story. For information on all things VBAC, including online and in-person VBAC classes, the VBAC blog, the worldwide database for VBAC doulas, and more, head over to thevbacklink.com. Congratulations on starting your journey of learning and discovery with the VBAC Link.
Hey everybody, I just wanted to take a quick sec to thank you all so much for listening to today's episode. We are so glad that you are here. This community is near and dear to our heart. We love you all so much. If you enjoyed today's episode, we would really appreciate it if you'd leave us a rating and review. Our whole team here at the VBAC Link actually gets to see these reviews come in, and it makes our day. A 5-star rating helps us share our podcast and gets these important messages out there. Thank you so much for listening, and we cannot wait to see you next time.